Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Hello. Hello. And this episode of Two in the Think Tank is brought to you by big supporters of the show, probably some of the biggest supporters of the show, us. That's right.
Us and our show, Magma, which you can download from sospresents.com. And you'll find it somewhere in there. Magma. It's probably our best work. It might be the last bit of show that we ever did. We'll have done in front of a live audience. Get it now while it's still available, which it will be forever.
I think it's so nice that one of our shows, Magma, is supporting our other show, Two in the Think Tank. It's just beautiful to see. Like, it's like our two sons, you know, getting along, mm-hmm. working together.
And one of them is a sort of a do-nothing who just comes, you know, sits around fantasizing, daydreaming. And then the other one has went and got a job straight away.
Yep.
And he tries to keep the other one afloat.
I mean, in a way, we say that this show is, you know, that show is supporting this show. But also this show is supporting that show, though, isn't it? By this show, you know, promoting that show. So I don't know.
Yeah, but what this show is gonna reveal is that his daydreaming older brother turns out to actually be Magma's dad.
Oh, yuck. Okay. Feels very grubby. I thought it was just some kind of nepotism, but it's much worse.
You and me, Andy, and you and me are Magma's mom.
All right. And
sospresents.com
and then you'll find it there. It'll be eminently clickable and then highly viewable.
Blim 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 blim
blim blim blim blim blim full of blood.
Oh, imagine a knife that you can pre-fill with blood.
But it's not a trick knife. It's not one of those stage knives. No, it's a real knife.
Real knife.
But it brings a bit of extra blood to the stabbing. Is that what we're saying? It's a combination, mm-hmm. combining the stage knife technology. I think this would be quite difficult to engineer, but I think it would be absolutely worth it. For the stabber who wants to make an impression, and not just the physical mm-hmm. impression that is left by stabbing someone, which is quite a deep impression. This is a more people talk a lot about the scene.
It's that wow factor.
People talk a lot about the scene of a crime, but to really sell a scene, you know, you've got to put in a bit of craft, a bit of the old mm-hmm. razzle dazzle, and
that's right. It's when you want to not just make a physical impression on somebody, but you also want to impress them with your stabbing skills.
He got blood out of me that I didn't even think was in there, and
in a single hit, I couldn't believe. Mm-hmm. He must have hit a main artery, but why would I have a main artery there in my buttock?
I mean, it must be possible to stab people so that you, like, get them in the bladder or something like that, and a bit of piss comes out, right?
Piss comes out. Now, that is some razzle-dazzle right there.
I mean, I don't know why that's interesting to me, but... You know, I guess I'm thinking about draining the main vein, you know, not the just one of those bloody veins. I'm talking
Do you think with a single knife cut you could get blood, piss,
and
semen, snot, ooh, vomit, and earwax all spray out in one go.
The Magnificent Seven.
The main five. Yeah. The Magnificent Seven, yeah.
I think there was only six.
Maybe a little one in there. Maybe a little bile in there.
Yeah, I get. Are those the humours? Remember the humours?
I remember those. Back we used to talk about that back in ancient Greek times.
Yeah, remember that used to be our main thing.
I mean, I guess you could get saliva in there and maybe a bit of brain fluid.
Brain fluid, yes. What you want is that that colostrum brain fluid from your very first thought. That's the good stuff.
Colostrum is in like the first bit of milk that comes out of the breast.
Yes, correct. There must be.
Oh, if you could get a little bit of male breast milk in there.
I feel like male breast milk would be very intense, very, very flavorsome, you know.
You think woody?
I'm thinking
have a
smoky.
Woody flavor?
Yeah. Smoky, fatty, a little bit sweet. It would really be a lot to deal with.
Smoky, fatty, a little bit sweet.
I don't think that I've never really examined this thought in any detail, but I think lurking in the back of my brain is the thought that in men's breasts, there must be a little bit of milk somewhere.
Yeah, I think obviously there's a sketch about the group of men who know that this possibility of male breast milk and the reality of men having nipples points towards the reality that men can do it, and they are all about recreating. It's like a Reddit. It started as a Reddit group.
Yeah, okay.
Of recreating, you know, bringing together all the studies and all the myths and recreating the circumstances in the body in which you can make that possible.
Mm. So this is male milkers. Like we did talk about competitive lactation on a previous podcast, where if men could lactate, it would become like a sport to us, where guys would be boasting about how much they pumped. I think this is a different thing. This is one of those
that was in a dream world, Andy. That we were fantasizing back then. This is a group that actually makes
this
it happen.
This is like your nofaps. This is like your incels. This is another male Reddit subculture of guys who are trying to, sort of like people who try and hack the brain and make it achieve at a higher level. So too with the man boob. And
it's exactly like those nootropics people.
Yes.
Yeah, which is those brain drug things. Yeah, these people are. And the thing is that we go in there. We try and read it, like you and I would go in there, try and read it thinking, let's see if this is possible. Whereas they're not even questioning whether it's possible. They're talking about how you can make it smokier.
Mm. Well, this and this to me is a little bit like, as well, I was reading a bit about the sovereign citizen people who believe that they can hack the government sort of by combining the right. It's really weird, their mythology. There's a lot of stuff that I didn't realize was sort of part of it, but they think they can hack government and bureaucracy by submitting the right combination of forms to access basically like unlimited money from the government. And yeah.
Wow.
And they've never, despite the fact that they've never achieved it, it's never been done. This has been part of the like idea from when it started in the 70s or something. And they just keep refining the process and trying and working away in like almost like a sort of a scientific kind of way. If you were a total lunatic and all you had was paperwork, but what if all you had was a male breast? What would you?
Well, these guys are like they're you know they talk about one guy, Kevin, who
and that's how it's pronounced, by the way, Kevin.
Kevin, who's now on 3 months of living off of only his own breast milk.
Oh, it's true. They would think that it's like, if to them, it's like a kind of perpetual motion. That like it would represent such freedom for men if you were able to unlock the power of the nipple. I mean, is this a little bit Secrets of the Perineum unlocked?
But those are that's a separate group who think that you can live off of just this the prostatic fluid. They're milking something else, Andy. And
great. What do they call it? They call it milk. Do they call it?
Well, male milkers is pretty good.
Milk. They call it
milk.
Boy soy,
which is kind of how I say it. Milk.
Is that? I hadn't noticed that. That's how you say it. But if you say so,
milk.
Milk. Did we?
I think that's. I've been made fun of for saying milk before. Milk, like it's M-E-L-K.
Yeah. Mel K. One of the Mels. One of the Spice Girls. Did you write down the first thing that we were talking about, Alistair? Because
the knife. Yeah. The knife. Oh yeah. I mean, that's pretty.
The knife with the extra blood inside. You know, I think that this could be an entire sort of range of small arms. You know, that like, you know, not just the knife that squirts some extra blood, but like the bullets that already have a little bit of fragment of brain and skull,
brain tissue
inside them.
They have a little explosive that lets those out.
A bazooka that is just full of guts. The whole... that whole enormous fucking thing, whatever it is that shoots out of a bazooka, it's already got like 4 feet of intestine and...
Yeah, a chunk of leg.
A chunk of leg. And it's all been preserved and it's all been ethically sourced.
These are preloaded weapons.
Yeah. I don't know if you can ethically...
For that razzle-dazzle.
I don't know if you can ethically source a leg. I don't know if there's like a...
What, if you grow a leg in a lab?
Lab leg? Yeah?
If you were to grow a leg in a lab, would you grow it inside pants?
Interesting.
Or would you just have a bare leg there in a bag or whatever? Like they, you know how like they want to grow a lamb outside of a, you know, an actual mother lamb. They just
grow it in,
come up with some plastic bag that allows fluid in there,
like an amniotic sac kind of thing.
Yeah, but plastic.
I wonder. I mean, you might use a kind of like a stocking sort of a thing, but I think you'd probably like if you were just growing a leg. I feel that you might want to have a sort of a rigid casing. But I also feel that like if you were going to grow a functional leg, you would want to grow it attached to some kind of a living thing. Like even if it was just like a frog or something, that's just like all frog and then just like a huge bulbous man leg hanging off it.
So like a frog that's had its legs removed for culinary reasons.
Yeah.
You just use the rest of that frog. Don't throw away the frog. When you could use that, we'll attach that to this lab leg. Frog DNA. Put it into frog DNA. I've heard that before. It seems to make sense to me, Andy.
We wouldn't be the first. I mean,
that's right. And you know, just have a couple of tubes with, you know, with needles going into that frog. That's just for the extra fluid. They're used to having extra fluid on them. That's why they're amphibians. They're the perfect...
But now...
They're the perfect animal for having extra fluids on them.
Now, Alistair, I'm picturing a sort of a Jurassic Park scenario where the frogs with the legs of men escape. And you look at what a frog is... Like, already a frog has disproportionately large legs. And you look at what they're able to do with those legs. It's very impressive.
Yeah.
But you give them two full-grown man legs, you know, tiny little frog body on top there, but still they would be unstoppable, I think. Like, you know, the kind of the leaping we're looking at.
Sure. Especially with those, if they still get to keep those sticky little feet at the bottom of the legs.
Well, they certainly at the front, they've got the sticky little feet.
Oh, they got it for their hands. You got those hands, you know. But I think maybe if we're attaching the one bit of the leg to the frog body, you may as well stick a foot on the end of the ankle.
a tiny little frog foot. Yeah. Sure. And I'm just wondering,
it'll probably be like one of those aquariums where if you put a goldfish in a bigger aquarium, then it gets bigger. It's probably the similar thing to the frog foot, you know. It'd be so free there swimming at the end of that ankle that it'd probably likely to just grow a tiny bit bigger, make it a bit more adhesive.
Yeah, you're right. And I what I want to know is, like, is that anything, basically? Like, can we make a Jurassic Park, at least a trailer for a horror movie that is frogs with human legs?
Yeah, well, I guess it feels like if let's say that wasn't your initial goal, you know, like if you're growing legs like this and then these things escaped and you were doing it on an island, I guess, you know, with the knowledge that something could go wrong, or at least it's the only place where, you know, like you're allowed to do this kind of genetic stuff with humans, you know, it could be, what's that island that's kind of, it's like a Chinese island that you're allowed to gamble
on? Macau?
Yeah, it'll be like Macau.
Yes, but the Macau of gambling with the lives of men, with the fate of humanity.
Exactly.
It's...
my man. It's in,
you know how they have a special economic zone for various sort of tax import-export kind of loopholes? This is a special ethics zone.
Exactly. I think China already is that place.
They've got a few of those going on.
It's an island known as mainland China.
Well, okay, these people doing these experiments on this island, they were like, well, there's no way this can get out of control because you know, we've got them on an island, and where are they going to go? But then somebody does the maths, and they work out that if you multiply the jumping power of a regular frog by the proportional size of a human leg, they are able to jump several hundred kilometers, and they are able to actually leap to the mainland. And he tries to warn them, but they don't listen because they've gone mad with power.
And it wouldn't be that crazy to think that some legs would be a little bit misformed. Mm. You know, this is your first couple of goes.
Oh, yeah, you're really just throwing stuff at the wall to see what sticks.
Some of them might be really wide but very thin.
Yeah.
And the frog could probably use them like wings.
Probably. And there'd also be a great scene where a frog uses its sexy female human legs to seduce one of the guards by just poking them around the corner. Yeah. Clever girl, more like.
Clever girl, and then, yeah. How did they know how did they learn how to use skirts?
There was a TV playing old cartoons in the lab, and the frogs would always watch it very intently. And they learned a lot of,
especially
the
Bugs Bunny
art of
getting
seduction.
Dressed up as women. Yeah, and they would learn to shave their legs. They could they could see that there was a lot of power in hair removal.
Yep.
I feel like this film can be criticized for its male gaze.
Well, that's one of the loopholes that we managed to get around, because they're not we're not objectifying women. These are frogs with sexy legs.
And they're male legs, but
they've been shaven.
But they've been shaven. It's their femininity.
I mean, is...
It's really a...
Well, I mean, this is, you know, probably a very problematic area that I'm going to discuss now. But much as we are trying to grow meat in a lab that we can feel okay about eating, yeah. I mean, would the idea of growing legs in a lab that you can feel okay about perving on, is that something that is likely to be in our future?
But I guess you're suggesting that we could do it with all body parts.
I wasn't going to go that far, just because I think keeping it.
But I mean, like, I mean, could you recreate most of a human in a lab, and then just for the sole purposes of perving on it?
Yep.
And maybe you could put like a real doll face on it.
I mean, yeah, that's getting like, to me, that's a little creepier than what I was hoping for, because I think I was hoping that I could find a little loophole where I could just stick to the humorous nature of just growing a sexy leg in a lab to perv on,
yeah,
without having to make it too humanoid.
I guess you weren't picturing a sort of a sweaty, desperate man having sex with some human meat grown in a lab.
No, I wasn't. It was just for looking at and going, ooh, and it's fine. It's fine because
because I mean, the problem there is that you realize that the future of sex robots is sex cyborgs that are partially human.
Yeah, you're right. Of course, you're right. Yes, that they will have,
you know,
everything that sort of has the bits of a human, and then you'll leave
you're
out
kind of
some
just removing
crucial...
the human brain. You've got some submissive, like, frog brain, exactly. I mean, but it's like an enhanced frog brain.
Well, is it enhanced or is it just pure frog brain, right? And
it could be pure frog brain.
But then it'll
but that comes with its
own
problems.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's it's aquatic, semi-aquatic lifestyle. It's spawning practices. Sure.
Sure, yeah. Do frogs live in mud or is that just toads? Am I thinking of toads?
I think some frogs live in mud. Absolutely. And I think you'll find that the distinction between frog and toad is not a very well drawn line. I think
must be like the difference between a moth and a butterfly. Apparently that's quite a fuzzy line as well.
Well, yeah, especially on the moth side, because they're quite fuzzy little guys, aren't they?
Yeah. But apparently that's also a trait of a lot of butterflies, which is why it's so difficult to tell them apart.
Right. Well, there you go. Very good. How do you feel about going into a cocoon, turning basically into mush, and then emerging as an utterly unrecognizable creature?
Yeah, I know, but where am I heading? Where am I heading? You know, what direction am I doing this for? Is it for a great improvement? You know, am I just then going to get wings and then go and eat some tree bark for a bit?
I don't think we would want to become a butterfly, but I'm interested in, you know, maybe, like, I think what would, if we are the larval stage of something, you know, I don't think if you showed somebody a caterpillar and asked them to guess what it was going to turn into, they would guess a butterfly if they didn't know any of the other details, any of the context. But so if the humans are the larval stage of something, what we would turn into would be a very sort of unrecognizable beast.
Yeah.
I mean...
Because I guess if you were asked what a caterpillar would turn into, do you think you'd say a snake?
Yeah, probably. That seems like much more plausible.
Or a millipede or
something
like that.
Fucked like that.
You kind of just look like like the maggot of a millipede.
So a human could well turn into... I mean, we never think about... Yeah, it's crazy that maggots turn in... I mean, it's so weird that... How does a maggot turn into a fly? What's the... Because they don't even have a cocoon or anything. They just... They maybe, just do it.
Maybe it's just like a sleeping bag that they're in.
Right.
A little sort of... Like a little meaty sleeping bag. And the fly's kind of in there.
It's just in there,
but it just kind of wiggles. It's just trapped. Like, I mean, you would move like that if you were inside a big white sleeping bag.
Yep.
You know? I think that must be... Because, I mean, that's a pretty big metamorphosis as well,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, it's equivalent.
Is metamorphosis like the most common way of growing?
Statistically,
we just think of
speaking,
it as...
you could very well be right. Because there are so many species of insects, and they all do it, don't they? They all bloody do it.
Because I remember Brian, a listener of the show and a friend, Brian, once mentioning or sharing an article with us, showing us that apparently the way that maggots jump, which is this kind of weird, like, wormy jumping style, is probably the most common type of jumping in the animal kingdom.
Right. Yeah.
And then you go, well, that's fucked. Firstly, I didn't know that maggots could jump in some way.
Mm.
But it's like, I guess it's where you kind of point your two ends towards the ground and then you slam your body down.
Yeah, and you flick yourself up.
And you get a little
up.
Bit of air.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, what meaning does that have if there's a most common way of jumping? And does that mean that we are jumping wrong? I mean...
In a way, well, it doesn't feel like we're jumping right.
Then what would it look like to see a human attempt this kind of maggot jump? I mean, I don't know what the stats are, but maybe maggots can get a very impressive amount of... I mean, it's probably one of those things where, like, relative to their body, they travel so much further than a human is capable of doing, right? Because I can't imagine that they're doing it to get relatively the same amount of lift that we do.
Do you think that wouldn't be enough for them?
I don't think that would be good for their purposes. So I'm wondering if we should be looking into harnessing the maggot jump. Because you look at something like the high jump at the Olympics. There's the Fosby flop came along and totally revolutionized that whole game. But since then, I imagine, like, it's been only incremental gains. You come along with a maggot jump.
The Fosby flop is pretty close to a maggot jump.
The Fosby flop.
It's like a regular human jump that's then turned into a maggot jump.
Yeah, well, I'm saying go full maggot jump, okay? You watch me at the Olympics. I go up. Mm-hmm. I just lie down in front of the the bar. Everybody's wondering what the fuck is going on here. No run up.
Yeah.
Then I sort of draw my body up into an arch, and then I smash my face onto the ground.
Oh, you just go face?
Yeah. And that just, like, flicks me.
Sort of like you give it one big hump.
It flicks me off. And over I go, you know, leaving skin and blood everywhere. But
wow.
I've gone 4 meters in the air. And that's now the sport. From then on,
well,
nobody's going to be doing anything different if you want to be taken seriously.
I think... Yeah, I mean, you got to take advantage of the springiness of the flesh. Mm. That's what you're doing, right? And I think that what needs to happen is you're probably pointing your toes and pointing your fingers and you're giving yourself as much of an arc as you can laying on the ground. And then you've got to hit the ground with the sort of the rest of your body coming down. So you're curling yourself like a croissant.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? But that's like that. And then you're smashing yourself so much into the ground that I think you have to break your pelvis because it's some of that rigidness that stops the maggot jump from being able to really gain its full potential.
Absolutely. But
and then you bounce.
Once you've freed yourself right. of the prison of the pelvis.
Yeah.
I wonder how much time people in these sports like this spend wondering if there's a totally different way of approaching the sport.
Mm.
Because, you know, that...
Within the rules,
that
yeah.
That is like the, you know, the computer that played Go in whatever that was, that story about, you know, and it turns yeah. out that everyone who's ever been playing Go has sort of been playing it wrong. And the computer found a way to win that was just like no one had ever thought of. I reckon there is that with every single sport, and that if you didn't know anything about the sport or you ignored everything about the way it's been played up until now, you could find a different way of playing it that would utterly change everything. Like, for example, soccer. Has anybody thought about picking yeah. up the ball with their hands and
That's
then
right.
getting into a yeah. car and driving?
Or biting the ball with their mouth and sprinting.
I mean, I am interested in that. I am very interested in that. If you had a large beak like a pelican,
mm-hmm.
you could absolutely do that. And
but there's like, you know, yeah, I mean, there's also nothing saying that you're not allowed to file your teeth down
mm.
and push them forward.
Correct.
You know, so that they kind
like
of
tusks.
Are a bit more like, yeah, like tusks and in some way that maybe you could scoop them up like a sort of like a forklift, or scoop up the ball like a forklift. Or,
well, also, there are no sports teams, and I know this is the sort of thing that we've talked about before, but there are no sports teams because they always talk about, you know, it's a long game, we're building up our squad, you know, we've made some good draft picks, but these guys, you know, they're not going to be at the top of their game for several years. Nobody is playing the super long game of like, well, we're going to try and make our players evolve, you know, via natural selection to have large beaks like a yeah. pelican. And sure, there's going to be a few lean years, but I think the fans, if they stick with us, we're looking at having a football player who can hold the ball in their beak. Within 10,000 years.
If your team is doing, really poorly, then you get an early draft pick, and you can pick the players whose
yes,
you know, physical yes. features best match those of a bird. Or
and you're not interested necessarily in how well they've played at the junior leagues or anything like that. You're just going up there with a tape measure, and you're measuring those lips. And that jaw.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's right.
Yeah. Then, I mean, it does seem like you're going to have to make your players breed against each other. With each other.
Yeah, or at least with each other's
yeah,
families.
Which, if we were in a mixed league, this is one of the shames of sport not being more mixed sports. But, you
yeah.
know, you can't breed within your team to improve.
Well, I think, why are you not just aiming to create, you know, if you're pushing yourself in one evolutionary direction, why are you not pushing yourself towards sort of also male baby carrying?
Correct.
So that you can breed a
that's,
team without having to change the
that's
rules.
That's the real investment, isn't it?
You know, because if you're like, well, let's hope that they change the rules so that there's mixed teams. Well, now that's a whole different angle you're taking. You may as well go for, you know, and you could create a player that could also maybe breed asexually with itself.
Yes, seize the means of reproduction. That is our plan.
Because then you could get all five people on the court or, you know, or whatever your sport you're playing on the field that are all the same player.
Well, then I wonder, you know, you might be able to find a loophole that you can actually have as many organisms on the sport, on the field as you want if they're still considered only the one person. You know, you look at those trees that that grow in, you know, there are some like copses of trees that they're like, well, this is technically all the one tree and it's thousands and thousands of years old. They're sort of connected through root systems and links and that sort of thing. Has anybody looked at the idea of grafting together players with a very long, flexible, fleshy tube so that technically they're just one person, and then you can get more people on the pitch that way? And or if you could have a, you know, a player who can reproduce asexually by like splitting their body in half like a bacteria, I think that's a good loophole as well, because you only send on one player, but pretty soon they start dividing and dividing and dividing like a bacteria in a petri dish. You know, we're talking exponentially speaking, you're going to have hundreds of thousands of players by the end of the game.
By the end of that, by the end of that half,
Is this anything? I mean,
Look, I think it's something. I mean, is it all kind of variations on maggot jump at the Olympics?
I think it is. It's a group of people who are studying the animal kingdom for ways in which we can improve in sports. You know,
And also studying the rules of the game to take advantage of things that they didn't think of.
Exactly. You know, you've got the laws of nature, and then you've got the rules of the game, and sometimes you can find a loophole in one that allows you to win at the other, and that's all I'm interested in.
Well, we didn't get around to thinking about what the humans would metamorphosize into.
Yeah, I was wondering if maybe it would be like a cow.
You think?
I don't know. You know, it seems different enough to a human that you would never guess it going there. But
yeah. I mean, is there a particular direction that these the creatures often go into? It feels like you reach a higher state. I mean, cow may be a higher state.
Yeah, I mean, flight does seem to be the big thing, doesn't it? Although ants don't, you know, they start just out as a little wormy grub and then they turn into a, you know, the ant that we all know and love without necessarily the ability to fly. So there's probably...
Well, a lot of them do fly as well,
though. Yeah, you're right. That's...
There are winged ants.
That's a really good point. What would a human become?
I mean, it's just what other things are there other than flight? You know, I guess there's the sort of the tadpole to the frog thing, which feels like a pretty close to some kind of metamorphosis thing.
Absolutely.
Where you kind of get, you gain legs and you gain shape. And I mean, it kind of feels like that's a lot of the stuff that we do in utero.
Yeah.
You know, we go from that kind of like weird tadpole looking thing into something with features. They're just doing it outside in the liquid.
Yeah, where everyone can see. It's very, very exposed. Very, you know, awkward,
very transparent.
Puberty kind of thing.
You always look a little bit weird during puberty.
I don't like, you know, I mean, we could go into the ocean and become like a shark or something like that, I suppose.
Yeah, or you could sort of develop abseiling equipment.
Okay.
I don't know, sort of natural. You know, ropes. You think maybe you could get ropes that just kind of are on your back?
Yeah.
You know, that are just, they're coiled around your shoulders.
Well, this is quite a Spider-Man transformation that we're looking at here.
I mean, if Spider-Man was just carrying around big coils of rope...
But you know that...
It would be a different kind of guy.
But don't you know that, like, in the cartoons... Because we're thinking of the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man, right? That's what you're thinking of, where he just shoots stuff out of his wrists. Okay. But in the cartoons, he makes little robotic things that
Vials.
Shoot out of his... That attach to his wrist and then shoot stuff out, right? So that's basically
As far as I remember, that he was he'd kind of like bioengineered some kind of thing, like a chemical that would turn into this web stuff, which to me seemed like a huge leap, bigger even than the leap that he would make from buildings, was this ability to create a new material that allowed him to leap from buildings.
Yeah.
And this stuff would just disintegrate and it wouldn't pollute the world. And
yeah, like that. And in many ways that's like much more unlikely than him being bitten by a radioactive spider and being able to...
Yeah.
I don't know, whatever the advantage that he got from that was. Like
why they didn't just say he got the powers to spin webs, I mean...
He's just extremely... Yeah, that's two things that shouldn't necessarily occur to the same person.
Because most of his spider powers are not that spidery.
Well...
Only crawling on walls is.
Yes.
The spider sense isn't?
No.
I can't imagine. Is that super strength? Doesn't feel like that's all that spider?
No, again, I don't think it's... I never look at a spider and go, God, that looks strong.
Yeah. You know, they should have made a decision early, just gone, you know what? I know it's weird that he's going to, like, that we're going to let him just have the web spinning thing. I know it's going to be weird that he's not going to do it with his butt, right? And that he's going to do it with his wrists. But that part will be less weird than if he's also some weird chemical genius.
Either that, or instead of him being bitten by a spider, let's have him be bitten by a radioactive material scientist. Who gives him the ability come up with very strong, state-shifting polymers.
Mm.
And then that's the power. And then the spider stuff, we can just be like, and he's strong, or he works out, or something like that. Because then that's actually that works quite well, doesn't it?
Yeah. He's one of those guys who works out a lot, like one of the material scientists. He's a guy who went to the gym a lot. You know,
is that anything? Spider-Man bitten by a radioactive researcher.
I mean, look, there is something there. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, it's not.
I think. I mean, it could be a scene in which
content is it.
I mean, I think it would be interesting if Spider-Man encountered a person who was like Spider-Man but had been bitten by a radioactive materials scientist.
Yes.
And then his thing was that he couldn't walk on walls or climb walls, but he had just created little suction cups.
Mm. I mean... Once you get to this point, you wonder, though, why didn't the material scientists themselves come up with this stuff? Why did we need to include this being bitten by mechanism in order for the transfer of skills?
Mm.
I mean, because...
Yeah. Well, I think it's the trauma of getting bitten that makes you think that you can fix society's ills.
You're right. Yeah. So that's...
You know, it's really brain damage.
And sort of an and you know, that trauma, that unresolved trauma that he's trying to fix things outside of himself, but really the problem lies within. So his kryptonite would be sort of therapy, cognitive behavioral therapy, to get over the stuff and what it's really about.
Yeah, I guess so.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Oh, there you go.
I mean, you think if Spider-Man had done movies, you know, in the comics, if he had done movies and become a huge, like a hugely famous movie star who could do all these stunts and things like that that no one else could, he could have then used that money to develop some kind of security force for the city or to, you know, if he really wanted to save people. Doing it as one man doesn't seem like the most viable thing.
The logical path to this is achieve movie superstardom, earn lots and lots of money, and then train up a private sort of paramilitary organization.
Well, he could learn from Eric Prince, who was the Blackwater guy, I think, related to, I think, Betty Davis. The
Betsy,
Trump appointee.
Betsy.
To the
DeVos.
Eh? Betsy Davis?
Yeah,
Davis?
She's the education secretary, isn't she?
Yeah, I think so. I think Eric Prince is related to her. He's owns Blackwater or whatever it's called now since they had all that bad press. But Spider-Man's like, oh, so you can try to like privatize the military or you can create a private military and that's a hugely, profitable enterprise. You know, you can send them in as federal agents into Portland or whatever. And
hang on. I think what we've invented here, isn't this just the Green Goblin? Isn't this just what he was doing?
Is that what he was doing?
Like a private military contractor making these mech suits so that soldiers could do that kind of stuff. I think we've just turned
right.
him
so
into
then
his nemesis.
Spider-Man and him could work together.
Are there any comic books? I mean, this must be a nightmare for anybody who knows anything about any of the comic books to listen to us talking this total crap, and I apologize. But are there any who are movie stars who, because I think it would be a great thing where, like, they're a movie star by day, but then by night they're a superhero, right? But then their story gets turned into a movie, and then they audition and play themselves in the movie about themselves, but nobody knows that it's them.
Oh,
I
that's
think
that
good. Would be really
yeah.
fun.
I think the Alan Moore comic book. What's that one? The
Watchmen.
Watchmen. I know I've read a prequel to it, and they're all kind of famous. Like they're all kind of famous, you know. But they're not really superheroes. Most of them, they're kind of just crime fighting people. But they kind of have like a public profile and things like that.
Yeah, they have an image. But then they're not movie stars, which was the main point that I was trying to make. For some reason,
you're right. God,
I don't know why
right.
I thought that would be good.
All right, look, I've written about the radioactive material scientist thing.
Yeah, okay, great.
But Andy, I think we need to go to because we have at least five sketches here. So I think we need to go to our three words from a listener.
Great. Yes. This is a great bit of the show.
And where, you know, somebody who's donates to our Patreon, $3 can suggest words and we'll try and come up with a sketch to it. And today's three-word listener is, their name is also three words, actually. Their name is The Tempest Marauder.
The Tempest Marauder. That is a beautiful name.
That is our listener.
For a girl?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what tempest or marauder means. I think marauder sounds like criminal of some sort.
Well, a tempest obviously is a conflagration, you know, a large weather event. A storm is a tempest. And a marauder is one who marauds, obviously. And we're talking a sort of a violent and vicious person who sort of indiscriminately attacks and destroys, villages, cities, sweeps through an area.
Seems like a good description of our listeners.
This is a typical Two in the Think Tank listener.
Microcosm.
Mm.
And so the Tempest Marauders, three words. Do you want to try and guess what one of them is?
Pippin.
What was that?
Pippin.
Pippin? Like Scotty?
Pippin? Scotty Pippin.
Well, that's it. One of them is megalithic.
Yeah, right.
The other one is spirit.
Yep.
And the other one is heist.
Megalithic, spirit, heist. Now, a megalithic, is that a big rock? A megalith? Are we talking about a big rock?
Well, I would say that megalithic can either mean massive or monolithic. Mm. But it can also mean relating to or denoting prehistoric monuments made of or containing large stones.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Megalithic spirit heist. I mean, I'm interested in, obviously Stonehenge, as we all know, was the first computer, right? And obviously as well...
Was it?
I mean, I don't know, Alistair. I'm using the word obviously liberally to cover up the fact that none of this
liberally
is obvious.
To mean...
But, and obviously computers are very desirable for stealing. You know, that any kind of technology like that, new technology, is very tempting to burglars. So could you have a heist where people try and steal Stonehenge because it's a highly valuable piece of...
They try to steal it, but when they touch it, their very spirit gets extracted from them and it steals something from them, and then they have to work hard to get that back.
Mm. Great. I mean a security system that steals the soul of the person trying to to
burgle. I mean look, there's a good film format here in that it's the heist where you're deep in something trying to steal something, and then while you're in there, something very core to you is stolen, and suddenly your mission is just to get that back.
And it's a really so that you compelling can... thing where, like, these people go on a big steal, does a big heist, but then and it's successful. But then after the heist, one of the members of the team starts to become convinced that their soul, like, they got into this huge bank vault, right? Impossible mission into this bank vault. But then when they get out, this person becomes convinced that their soul got trapped in the vault. And it sort of drives them
mad.
Or
in the diamond that they stole, or the emerald that they stole.
Yeah.
Like, they had to steal some crystal.
Yep.
And when they held it, something cut deep into their self, and they had one of those kind of flashing screen things.
Great.
And then they had to bring it to their boss or whatever to finish off the job so they could get the milk. And then they were like, I think that rock took my soul.
And so then they have to try and get it back somehow? Yeah, it's very...
Perhaps. But
very compelling. I'm sure this has been done. This is going back to my Stonehenge thing, but doing a sort of an Apple computer kind of Steve Jobs type thing, but with Stonehenge, where like you, we do a, like a profile on the sort of the Paleolithic Steve Jobs of Stonehenge, the person who created that,
mm-hmm.
and how, you know, the personality cult around them and the design decisions that they made, and the their company and their all that stuff.
I just don't understand in what way it's a computer.
In what way is Stonehenge a computer? Well, people have described it as being that, because what it does is it allows you to work out various things based on the location of different stars and the moon and the sun or whatever relative to the rocks. So it has that kind of that functionality of and then you could do some fucking parody shit, I don't know.
You and me, we use that Steve Jobs talk. We've used that Steve Jobs talk in about two or three things in the past. And I don't know if anybody ever recognizes that, other than us wearing turtlenecks.
Yeah, no, I think we've used a very specific reference to one of Steve Jobs' talks, the iPhone being not three things but one thing. But I think more generally, his persona as that thing. I mean, I realize I'm not. It's a little off the boil. Ever since he died several years ago, and even before then, had been doing that thing for so long, it had been parried so much that it wasn't very relevant anymore. But I still think that by combining it with the even more off the boil element of ancient stone circle computer gags, we might be able to create something new and exciting.
Yep.
That'll really get people talking.
Yep. All right. Well, I've written it down.
Thank you.
So I'll take us through. So thank you very much, The Tempest Marauder, for that. I think that heist thing where it steals your soul, I think there's something in there. Because
at the moment, that one's not, you know, it's not such a comedy idea for me at the moment, but it could be. It could be.
My gosh. Andy, it's pregnant with comedy. It just doesn't sound like it right now. But I mean, it's a whole film.
So there's bound to be some comedy. Like in a whole film, even serious films have moments of levity.
Oh, Andy.
Are there people who punch up scripts for tragedy? You know how, like, in Hollywood, when they've got a comedy script and it goes out or it goes to some testings and then it's not getting enough laughs, you get in some top comedians and they come up with funny jokes that can be shouted in from off screen or things that can be reshot. We've talked about this before on the podcast, but what about with a tragedy? What about with a, and I hate to go to this example, but a Schindler's List, where Spielberg shows it at the screen, screening, but people aren't quite crying. And so they get some real tragic people with really bad lives who come up with more depressing stuff that could happen and extra sad little tidbits that can be shouted in from off screen when characters are looking in the other direction. And I just lost $5, you know?
I think there's actually, Louis C.K. talked about one of those things where he said, it was just like he thought that somebody had told Spielberg about that little girl that just screams out to the line of people going into concentration camps, "Goodbye, Jews! Yeah. Goodbye, Jews!" like that. And he was like, oh, it's like somebody told him that. And he was like, that's going in the movie. Like, that's just so heart-wrenching and kind of awful. And you go, oh, yeah, that somebody's just punching up with tragedy. This film, and that would be the truly kind of like awful, like, you know, the weird awful thing of like you're listening to these people's stories and you hear something really bad, and inside you're like, oh, that's good.
Can I use that? Can I use that? Are you going to use that?
Yeah. So, yeah.
So that's the Punchdown crew, and these are all sort of like real, they all speak with sort of middle European accents, and they've all got really tragic lives, and you call them in, and these guys are the best in the business, and they'll make your...
They've all got sunken eyes, and just like, yeah.
They spend a lot of time just staring off into the distance.
Yeah, but it's like it's a writer's room table. Like, it's like they're around the table throwing things in. But there's a lot more silence. What if the food was cold?
Yeah, really good. The boy finds a mouse, and his father sees him playing with the mouse and forces him to eat the mouse. Or eats the mouse.
This is like his father tells him that when he was young, he used to have a mouse, and the mouse had a name. And that he had to eat the mouse. And that the mouse had been his only friend.
And they all shout this in from off screen while they're walking away. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, unless we can do a reshoot, this is what we're going to have to do.
You know, it's like yeah, while the shot of the kid walking away, we could say it was his dad. We'll be shouting it from the window. I had a mouse.
Well, people have been saying
and
that
the
this,
mouse had a name.
This bit of the movie did feel a little light. We did let the cloying atmosphere of tragedy lift for a moment. So I guess we could throw that in. Get the dad back for some BO recording.
Just yell. Yell tragedy. I guess, you know, a lot of yelled tragedy is just sort of wailing.
You're right. Screams.
All right, Andy, I'm going to take us through our sketch ideas for today. We got the male milkers. These are people. These are the group of Reddit guys.
It's a subculture.
They've become, you know, it's a subculture, and there's probably a group and, you know, a version in each town.
Oh, really?
Where they get together. Yeah.
Share tips.
It starts online, but then they start meeting. You know, it kind of becomes a bit of a men's shed kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's just a great way for men to talk, but then also to extract milk from their own nipples.
I've got something to get
to
off my chest.
Of how much men would love to work on their own types of breast pumps that, you know, and they've... They would just tinker away at kind of like... You know, at finding ones that extract more milk quicker and stimulate.
This one is actually designed for Jersey cows. They say that it's not for human use, but you can override it and build a little suction adapter.
Then we got the knife with the extra blood in it, and these are all preloaded weapons, basically that allow. You know, allow for more impact when you hit, and makes it, you know, it's for the showmanship of the stabber or the bazooka. We've got the frogman leg island, which is like a Jurassic Park style thing where they were growing human legs for some reason.
Well, leg replacements, right? Or maybe to objectify them. Maybe to objectify them. We could combine those two.
I'm not sure. Yeah, it could be for leg replacements for people who are unhappy with their height.
Yes. Okay. You know?
But then they all escaped, these frogs, and they with the human legs, and they, I think maybe some person, we didn't think we got to this when we were talking about it, was a bit, you know, maybe they abandoned the project, but some opportunistic person thought, I'm going to go back to this island and I'm going to make this a tourist attraction. Yeah. Then we have maggot jump at the Olympics.
Yeah.
Which is somebody who realizes that the maggot jump is the most common type of jumping in the world and a better form of jumping. Mm-hmm. And they take it
they
to
train their
the
squad.
Olympics where they
yep.
train their squad, which is what they call smashing their pelvis against the ground.
Training their squad.
In order to, yeah.
Nice.
That's maybe you could use the power of your sperm to fly. You know, they're normally made for swimming through water.
Yeah,
you know, or fluid of some sort. But if you could adapt them for the air,
or I mean, this is a lot to think about, Alistair. But if they are all capable of swimming, say you could this we find out that somebody's been doing this at the Olympics. And there's actually no rule against it. But what they've done is every single one of their sperm, they've lashed to the inside of their penis with a very small cable. And just when they leap into the pool in the swimming, they ejaculate. And they actually get pulled along by their swimming sperm. And you don't... it's just a small boost. It's, you know, it's a fraction of a percent. But that makes a huge difference.
All those
level.
Things help, yeah. And because they had been bitten by a radioactive material yeah. scientist and they'd created tiny ropes, you know, tiny sort of like one of the things that you use to control a horse.
Reins.
They'd created tiny sort of, you know, biopolymer reins that could go around the sperm and attach to their sort of various bits. And have the sperm pull them along, of course. It all makes sense. And then there's also, the sub idea here of people who have evolved, you know, try to work towards evolving towards taking advantage of rules of sports, such as developing tusks so that you can carry the soccer ball around on your head or other ideas. Then we've got the person bit by a radioactive material scientist. It's basically exactly Spider-Man, but he's just gone at it from the
other end.
He can, from the other end, he can create the webs. And then he somehow figures out ways of sticking to walls, probably also using material science.
Maybe he was already able to stick to walls because, you know, it turns out that Peter Parker was already very good at developing things. So what if this guy already had the ability to climb up walls, and then the only extra thing he gets is the scientific skills. Anyway.
Sure. And then we've got the heist. This is a straight comedy idea. It's the heist that steals your soul. It's because, look, your average person, when they go on a heist, they don't bring anything of value.
Yes.
Other than their
that's
own
a classic,
life.
That's a classic mistake that you learn not to do early in your heisting career. Don't bring anything that's more valuable than the thing that you're going to steal, especially if there's a chance of you forgetting it while you're there.
Exactly. So like a wallet filled with $300,000 or something like that, right? And obviously, they all know that they've got their lives. Is that what the thing that they are bringing is probably more valuable than the thing they're taking? But often when they lose that, they don't have to live without it, right? So, what happens in this case is somebody gets their soul taken from them, which they hadn't realized was something they were carrying around with them, probably because they were an atheist.
Mm. Yes, correct.
And then they learn about the errors of their ways, and they have to go back and claim their soul from the gem or whatever they touched that extracted their soul. And they have to go into some deeper world, a vault even further down, possibly hell.
Oh, yeah, that's good. I mean, hell heist. Imagine.
Hell heist. Mm-hmm.
We find out that the devil has a whole lot of gold, and we're going to heist Satan himself, you know. We're going to hit the Bellagio, the other one, and Hades all in one night.
All in one night. Yeah. It's the hottest vault of all. And then we've got the ancient Stone Circle Steve Jobs presentation.
Yes.
I assume it's essentially the same, but they're wearing a Hessian sack.
But it's got a turtleneck.
Yeah. It's got a turtleneck Hessian sack.
God, that'd be itchy. Be the worst.
Yeah, but we're committed. And then we got the punch down crew. Mm.
And then we got pulled along in the water by sperm with little leashes.
Mm-hmm. Pulled by sperm with little leashes.
Thanks, Al.
Great.
Andy,
it's been a pleasure.
What a joy.
Bing, bing, bong, bing, 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 bing.
I have some ice, baby. Come and get my ice, maybe. If you want ice.
I like that, and I really want that. I want that. All right, we did it.
Please follow the link down below. Download Magma. We'd love that. Support us in other ways if you want. Patreon. Leave a review on iTunes. God, that makes us happy. And you can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Stupid Old Andy. We are at 2 in Tank. And Alistair.
I'm at Alistair TV.
Alistair did a really funny little video. Check it out.
Yeah,
it's a sketch. Yep. It's a little sketch, Al.
It's a tiny little sketch. What? It's been my ideas that I've been like, maybe I can come up with little sketches that I can film by myself within 5 minutes.
I thought it was gonna get like a million retweets. It didn't.
Look, it didn't. It got retweeted by one person that had a million followers, and it didn't help it in any way. It was amazing. It got less retweets than most things that I've been doing recently. So that's pretty good.
Pretty good. And we love...
Love...
You.
You. Oh, we got to stop that. Wait. Oh, geez. Hang on.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates. It's not optional. You have to do it. We used to go easy on it, but now you have to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.